independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Lance Erline just made a run into the Killer Bees. Lance just said, why is Granato always
because
coming after
John,
Branham?
That's what he does. But basically,
yeah. Thank you, Lance.
You haven't been accepted into the family until John has come at you.
Yeah, I took it as a... I would always bend the knee for Granato. He knows that. I want to be John Granato when I grow up.
You would always bend your knees for Granato?
I would bend the knee. Like, I would bow down to the godfather of Houston sports radio. He's my hero. There's no denying that. But whenever you have whack takes, I don't care who.
Your goals and aspirations, sir.
No way. Then Granato. Granato's a legend. But even legends have whack opinions from time to time. And whenever there's a legend making a whack opinion, you got to go toe to toe with a legend. That's just something that you have to do. Everybody crosses that bridge at some point in time. Speaking of legends, the Houston Astros, they play the New York teams. Let's put it that way. For the next 9 games, they play the Mets twice today. Or not twice today. They play the Mets twice this series. Once today, once tomorrow. Then they head to the Bronx for a 4-game series against the Yankees. That ought to be fun. A 4-game series in the Bronx when they're red hot on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The Bronx is going to be burning.
Well,
the Astros
G. Cole almost had a no-no last night.
Yeah, he did. He got broken up and they got a no decision.
Yeah.
But then they won. They won late. Then the Astros have an off day in New York, go to the Mets for 2, and then they play a lone 1-gamer. Remember the Astros and Yankees were supposed to start off the season this year, that 3-game set at Minute Maid Park, but it got banged. Thank you, Mr. Manfred. So the Yankees will come into town for 1 game, a rogue 1-gamer against the Astros June 30th, my birthday, in case anybody wants to give me a gift. And then they'll play the Yankees in a day-night doubleheader the day after.
Memo to dessert All-Star. Gallery, still waiting on the cakes, by the way, or cake.
Yeah, I don't think it's coming.
You think that ship has sailed? we were told it was supposed to come yesterday.
Well, they have through the end of June, but I'm not getting my hopes up. But looking at this series, look, the Mets, best record in the NL. They have more runs than anybody else in baseball. Yankees, hot. Best team in the American League in terms of the standing. Do you have a negative feeling going into this Mets series? We'll start there. 2-game series against the Mets. Tonight, tomorrow, day game tomorrow. They start at 3:05. Wink, wink. Do you have a negative series or a negative feeling going into the series?
I kind of do. And I think it's because of the pitching. Because you don't know which Urquidy you're going to get. And I think more so than that, it's because the lineup isn't 100%. And you and I were talking before the show. I don't expect Yordan to be in the lineup today. Because I think that they're not going to push him till he's absolutely ready to play. And even Dusty kind of indicated that in terms of the fact that, you know, they don't want him. Dusty didn't even want to give up the injury, he says, because he didn't want them pitching him a certain way that might bring more discomfort or extend the injury.
Which was such a lame excuse.
And it was. But I think that they'd rather have him closer to feeling good and 100% to play a Yankee series of 4 games than they would about a quick 2-game series against a team in the other league in the Mets. So I don't think he's going to play. But whether he does or not, Pena's not going to play. You look at, you know, the lineup they're probably going to throw out there, and it's disappointing. I go in with more of a negative feel because they're not going to be the team we know them to be, taking on the second-best team in baseball.
J.J. Mattekevich, though, man, he hits home runs.
He's hit one.
Every single hit he's had in his big league career has been a homer. All he does is hit dongs.
And that's one.
Mauricio Dudong hit the home run the other day. They're getting homers from unlikely sources. I look more at the 9-game series than I do the 2. Like, I don't know if I'm 60-40 whether or not Yordan plays today. I really don't care if he doesn't play. Like, if you're resting him up to make sure he's 100%, not 90%, fine. It's 162.
We don't know where he is.
Well, they Dusty Baker mentioned to Buster Olney. They were scared it was a hamate bone, which they did the X-rays, they did the MRIs. There was nothing broken there. So now we're talking about like a sore palm. Like, I don't know how serious that injury is whenever you consider the fact that it wasn't the hamate bone. So he probably, you know, had a funny spot in his hand. So I'm kind of 60-40 that he plays today. If they didn't find a break in the hamate bone, what else could it be? Like, I mean, it's in the palm of the hand. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a serious injury.
But it's going to linger.
It could be sore.
And if he takes a stinger and gets jammed on the handle or something like that, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, they have such a big lead in the division.
Sure.
Nothing's pressing them to push him out there as soon as there's a chance he could play, regardless of what condition he's in.
Exactly. I don't care if he's in the lineup today. I just don't think the injury's all that serious, especially with the fact
I would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, now if you're trying to get him from 85% to 100% and he misses two games, that's fine by me. I'd be happy with them to do that. I am watching Twitter very closely today because not only the Yordan thing, but also the Aledmys Diaz thing. Mm-hmm. And usually they announce the like the injury list and any...
He's got discomfort, Jeremy.
Shoulder discomfort.
Discomfort.
Discomfort. Which, mm-hmm. I mean, discomfort for the Astros can range to one day off to
the
3 months
John
off.
Surgery. Yeah. It could be Tommy John surgery.
So, yeah, discomfort is the... it's the always lingering, questioning... One day through 365-day injury with the Astros. So I've been looking at that a little bit closer. If I look at it from just this game, because if Yordan is not in the lineup, whatever. Diaz not being in the lineup, okay, whatever. Now Dubon's probably starting at short because Pena's still on the IL. But the thing that if I look at just this one game tonight, Jose Urquidy going up against the team in baseball that has the most runs of any other Major League Baseball team. Like, Urquidy was good in his last out and got rid of the cutter. Looked like a little bit more closer to vintage Urquidy than 2022 Urquidy. I think we're going to get a pretty good litmus test on if Urquidy went vintage or is still 2022 Urquidy tonight.
Not
against
a litmus
the
test,
Mets.
But a litmus test?
Yes, litmus test.
You know, I think he's got a little extra red ass, though, too, doesn't he? He came from the Mets.
Urquidy?
Yeah. I think he was in the Mets system first. Yeah, they traded for him. Or Luno got him.
I thought he was an international signing.
I thought the Mets had him first. In this, I could be wrong, but I thought that he was somehow tied to the Mets before he got to Houston.
Well, I hope if that is the case, which I'm trying to find out if it's not, but whatever. Like, well, I hope he does have that red in his behind today when he goes up against the New York Mets.
Look, I would love any kind of extra motivation that gives him an advantage or even a better chance. But I don't like the way it stacks up. The timing is all wrong if you're an Astros fan. And thankfully, it's not the playoffs, and it's not anything that's a big pressing deal. It's just because you want to see how your team stacks up, and you want to, you know, you believe that your team is one of the three best teams in baseball, and you know the other two are going to be on your schedule for the next week or so. You'd like to be at full strength so that you could really get a fair barometer of where you sit. And it also gives James Click a fair barometer of what he might have to focus on. And you're not going to get that.
And the Astros have played the fewest games against opponents with winning records. They've played 15 games against teams that are above 500. Now, they are 8-7, so they do have a winning record against those teams. But the next 9 games against the best 2 records in all of Major League Baseball, I think a lot of Astro fans are looking at this series. I'm curious how they are looking at this series. 713-780-ESPN. I look at it more in the 9-game stretch than I do this series, by the way. 713-780-3776. Like, whatever the Astros do against the Mets, like, whatever. Whatever they do against the Yankees, the 4 games in the Bronx, whatever. I'm looking at this 9-game stretch more than I'm looking at this 2-game series against the Mets. And to me, it's not even so much the record. Like, if they go 5-4, okay, great. The Astros above 500 record, a winning record against the 2 best records in all of baseball, you would gladly take that, especially when 6 of those 9 games are going to be on the road. So I would sign up for 5-4 right now. Right now, before this 9-game stretch against the 2 best records in Major League Baseball. But to me, I look at it more for the barometer than I do the win-loss record. Like the Angels lost yesterday. You gained a half a game on a day you didn't play. The lead is double digits in the American League West. You want to get a feel for who the Astros are compared to the rest of Major League Baseball. So, like, win-loss record aside, I just need an Astro team that looks the part, right? Like, they look like a team that has the third best odds in Vegas to go to the World Series. I need the Astros to look like the team that Fangraphs has as the most likely team to win the World Series. So, records aside, like, Urquidy could get rocked today by the Mets. It's not going to change my opinion too much of the Astros. But this 9-game stretch, if they look like they belong with the Mets and the Yankees, I'll feel good about where the Astros are.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know what, even more so if they find a way to squeak out some wins when they're not at 100% in full strength and they are still nursing some injuries and guys aren't available to come back.
Yeah.
By the way, I was wrong. And I know you guys sometimes feed off of that. But I looked at his bio. You were right.
I did too, but I didn't want to throw you under the bus.
No, that's fine. And I'm happy to admit it. I don't know where I had heard that, but so there's no extra red ass. But I look at it and say, you're exactly what you said. I mean, I look at the games against the teams that matter, and I want to see It's different like in the NBA, right? When you play the Warriors in December, it's way different than if you're going to play the Warriors at the end of the season getting ready for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But in baseball, especially when you only see a National League team like the Mets on a very limited scale, and we know how much ramped up extra comes with playing the Yankees, they're always more important. There's always an asterisk or a little gold star on the schedule for these games. And you do want a barometer. But like I said, there's a couple barometers. There's from our perspective. There's the fans' perspective. There's the general manager's perspective. Because I think the general managers of the Mets and Yankees, Cashman and company, are looking at it too. And they're going, how good is this Astros team? And if they see some things in this series, they go, boy, we still got some work to do. We might need a couple of guys that hit for average. Or we might need some guys, you know, whatever, side of the plate matter, whatever you're looking for. They might have to do something to enhance something. But I think it's really hyper-important for James Click because this is the kind of absolute telltale barometer that he needs that, to your discussion that started with your tweet, is this team capable of winning a World Series as it currently is constructed, or do I need to add a few pieces?
Vegas and Fangraphs think so. 713-780-3776. 9-game stretch, 2 best records in Major League Baseball. What do you want the Astros to do in this stretch, record-wise? I just said record-wise, throw it out the window. What do you want to see?
I want to see a competitive team.
Give me a record.
Out of the 9 games?
Out of the 9. 6 of them are on the road.
They're not a bad road team.
I'm going 4-5. I'd be okay with 4-5.
I think I feel like I was going to either go 5-4 or 4-5.
Yeah, 4-5, I'll be okay with.
I'm really happy with 5-4, yeah. Especially because they're dinged up.
Yeah.
But if they squeak out 4 wins with the guys that they have currently okay throwing out there, I'm good with that.
4 wins, okay. 5 wins, good. I think that's
the
difference.
Does it scare you if 4, they get okay to like 7? Because now James Click won't do anything?
No, absolutely not. It makes you feel great. It makes you feel like you got a World Series contender. 713-780. Now, if you go 1-8, now we got a conversation that we have to have. 713-780-3776. 9-game stretch. How many games do you want the Astros to win? What would make you feel okay about the Astros? What would make you feel good about the Astros? All right, coming up next, how long will Justin Verlander keep going? We'll discuss when we return, but first I want to tell you about my good friends over at Pro Dunk Hoops. They have the best basketball goal on the market. You've been hearing us talk about that forever. And look, you need to give them a shot. If you're looking for a goal, you want to put something out there in your driveway so you can have some fun, so you can have some fun with your son or your daughter who could play basketball, high school, middle school. Maybe they play some travel ball as well. Well, let them work on their game by getting the best basketball goal on the market and having it installed in your driveway or yard. The goals of ProDunk Hoops have the tempered glass backboard, which gets you a true, authentic feel, which is great to have. Adjustable goals, you can lower it down to 5 feet, throw down some jams, raise it up to 10 feet, work on your shot, or anywhere in between. If you are throwing down some jams, it's got a competition-grade breakaway rim, perfect for dunking, perfect for hanging, and it makes sure to keep you and your loved ones safe. They also have an extended overhang, which keeps a clear path under the rim. That's big for me because I have fragile ankles. I always roll them. I don't have to worry about that with the extended overhang for Pro Dunk Hoops. Durability, also a strength of Pro Dunk Hoops. Stainless steel fasteners, thicker steel, and their exclusive rust armor, which you have to have in Houston, and it makes the goals of Pro Dunk Hoops sturdy and strong. You can't find that in the big box stores. You also can't find another feature of Pro Dunk Hoops in the big box stores. They'll install the goal. The pros at Pro Dunk Hoops will head out to your house and professionally install the goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't have to do a thing. Let the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops do all of the work for you. Pro Dunk Hoops goals come in a variety of sizes and options. That'll be the perfect fit for your driveway or yard. Give them a call, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Just how long can Justin Verlander go? Verlander, even though he got touched up a little bit in his last start, kind of got nickel and dimed in that game. Verlander's been very good this year. One of the pitchers with one of the most amount of wins in the American League. I think he's tied for second currently. He's 8-3, 230 ERA. A whip under .9. He's been fantastic. Hall of Fame career. He's 39 years old, coming off of TJ. Had only pitched one game prior to this season in the last 2 years, And it's like he picked up right where he left off as a true contender for a Cy Young in the American League. As we all know, Sunday Night Baseball, because how can we forget Carl Ravitch calling the Astros game on Sunday? But before the game, David Cone, who was one of the analysts alongside Eduardo Perez in that booth, he had an interview with Justin Verlander. Did not air during the game, but they did it for their ESPN YouTube channel, which I went back and listened to it. And Cone asked Verlander about, like, what are some things that you're chasing, right? Because he's 39 years old. He's done everything in baseball. He's got tons of money. He doesn't really need to keep going. He doesn't need more finances. So, like, what is his motivation? What is his desire to keep going? Here's what Justin Verlander told David Cone about that.
You know, 300 wins, 4,000 strikeouts that are just, like, really gaudy numbers that would be really cool to achieve. But
it's a small club. Yeah. 4,000 strikeout clubs are really,
yeah,
really small club.
It is. And it would be just like kind of everything else in my career. I think once you achieve it, it's you take a step back and be like, wow. All the hard work that went into getting here is pretty special. But it's not like that's my driving force. If it happens, it happens. I do know one thing. If, you know, there will be no stone unturned for me personally to not help extend my career to get as far as I can possibly get.
So that's what Verlander, it does sound like it is his driving
Welcome
force.
Welcome to
though.
Avocado ice cream, baby.
Yeah, he might need a lot of avocado ice cream to pitch as long as he's going to need to get to 300 wins. 300 wins, always a milestone for pitchers. You get to 300, I mean, it cements your Hall of Fame resume. Even that is backed down recently because of the new modern-day baseball. Four pitchers have reached 4,000 strikeouts. Three of the four have actually donned an Astros uniform. Nolan Ryan, more strikeouts than anybody else.
Randy
He's
Johnson.
The only one with 5,000. He's got 5,700. It's amazing. Randy Johnson, second.
Roger Clemens.
Roger Clemens is the third. So all the top three have all donned an Astros uniform.
Who's fourth?
The other one, Steve Carlton, who never donned the Astros uniform. Yeah, two lefties, two righties. So if Verlander can get to 4,000, he would be the fifth pitcher that got to the 4,000 strikeout club, and it would be the fourth that has donned an Astro uniform, which is pretty miraculous that the Astros have had that level of pitching at some point. Now, Johnson for a few months, Ryan for a good stretch in his 30s, I believe, and then Clemens, of course, towards the twilight and the end of his career, but was still very good. Now, you start to look at the career numbers for Verlander. He wants 300 wins. He's currently at 234. He's got the rest of this season. Strikeouts, he's right under 3,100. He probably averages around, you know, 225, 250 strikeouts for a full season. We were doing the math, and we'll bore you with the details. It looks like he's going to need 4 years after the conclusion of this one.
You're not expecting a Cy Young 20-game season. You're trying to be realistic. So we average 15-ish wins a year, depending on the team you play with. 4 years should be fair.
I think that would be kind of like – I think that's the answer is 4 years. Because you got the rest of this season. You still have two-thirds almost, you know, two-thirds between a half of the rest of this year. You would have next year, the year after that, the year after that. Of course, we know Verlander's contract situation. He's got the option if he hits 130 innings, which he's already at 82. He's going to get to that threshold, and we'll see what happens in terms of the offseason if Verlander is still around. But do you think that Justin Verlander will get to those numbers?
I don't know that he's going to get to 4,000, because as rubbery, elastic, and the longevity he's had in that arm, even after Tommy John surgery, I just don't know that he is as much of a strikeout pitcher, and as he gets older, if he can maintain being a strikeout-type pitcher. He's one of the most intelligent thinking pitchers that we have in the game that we've seen in quite a while. So I'm going to say no on the 4,000, but I think he's going to chase the 300, because if you think about it, when we started talking about a lot of the subjects that come up on this show, from the way baseball's changed to the way they baby pitchers these days, like Steven Strasburg and Jabba Chamberlain, and if you're a big name pitcher, they say that the days of winning 300 games are over. Well, he's a historian. He's a numbers chaser. And I believe that he realizes, as long as the team he's playing for is decent to pretty to fairly good, he has a legit chance to still get to 300. And I think that's going to be the key number he chases. And I think he can get there.
See, I think he's going to chase both. I think he's going to hang on.
He's going to chase both, but I think he's going to get 300. I don't know that he's going to get to 4,000.
I think he's going to get both. I think he's going to get both. I think he's going to play for four more seasons after this one. Now, next year, you're talking about the first year at 40. He'll be 40 next season, so now you're looking at 40, 41, 42, 43. That's not out of the realm of possibility, right? Somebody pitching to their 43 years old. We saw Ryan do it forever. We saw Clemens do it. Randy Johnson actually hung on for quite a while, too. So I think that Verlander is going to chase it.
We less power pitchers do it.
Right.
But we no, because, you know, like Jamie Moyer and the Negroes and
Gaylord Perry. But then you have a Ryan, you have a Clemens, you have a Johnson.
Yeah, I'm saying those are the power pitchers you mentioned. Mm-hmm. For the most part, when guys are in their 40s and they're still pitching, whether they were a power pitcher at one point or not, Bartolo Colon, I mean.
They change who they are. Yeah. Like Greg Maddux gets a lot of praise for being able to nibble the corners and, you know, knowing how to pitch and living with 92. We forget a lot of times that Maddux was mid to upper 90s whenever he was first starting out. Even somebody who was on the top of my mind just a moment ago that reinvented, like Zach Greinke was another example of that, reinvented who he was to still be pitching right now. And I think Verlander still has a very hard
look at a lot of ways Kershaw did stuff. Too. Kershaw was a power pitcher when he came in. He could really bring it, and he's adapted.
But the other thing with Verlander is the fact that, like, why I think he's going to do both is because Verlander's also a draw. Like, I think, especially if he doesn't really care so much about winning, let's say the last of those 4 years, maybe he goes back to Detroit and takes a retirement tour. And, you know, he's a draw in terms of getting 300 wins, like Miggy Cabrera was a draw to get 3,000 hits in Detroit. Or he's a draw chasing 4,000 strikeouts. People will give Justin Verlander a job, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, to be able to stick around, you might not be one of the, let's say, top 150 starting pitchers, five-man rotation, 30 teams.
You might go from an ace to the fourth or fifth starter.
Right, by a team.
Right.
Like Zach Greinke to Kansas City. Yep. Like, there's 150 starting pitching jobs, like, without injury in baseball.
But even still, Jeremy, let's take the Greinke example with the Astros. You could be Justin Verlander on a Yankees or a Dodgers team when you're only expected to be the fourth or fifth option.
Right.
And you still have a chance to get the wins that you need.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be the hero that you'd have to be if you were the ace.
See, that's the part, too, of, like, going to a losing team is that you still have to be willing to, like, you have to find wins there, right? Like, Zach Greinke, I don't know if Zach Greinke's a top 150 starting pitcher right now. There's 30 teams in baseball, 5 jobs on every staff, 150, you know, starting pitcher roles in Major League Baseball, and I know injuries, blah, 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 blah. Like, Zach Greinke right now is not on a winning team, so he's having trouble finding the wins. So Justin Verlander would have to be in that spot of his career. Now, here's the other question I want to ask you on the other side. I'll ask this to the Hive as well. We'll ask you both questions. 713-780-ESPN. Will Verlander get to 300 wins? He currently has 234. Will Verlander get to 4,000 strikeouts? He currently has 3,094. 713-780-ESPN. The second part of that question, if Verlander gets to both of those marks, 300 wins, 4,000 strikeouts, will he play the rest of his career in Houston? 713-780-3776. We'll talk about that on the other side. Also, somebody's claiming that the Yankees are playing with different baseballs. We'll take a listen to that, and if we think it's true, that's
next.
At least
it wouldn't be a guy that said things about baseball they walked back a day later.
Oh, I see what you're doing there. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Asking the question, does Justin Verlander, he told David Cone that he wants to get to 300 wins, which currently right now, 234, he's 39 years old, but he's still pitching well. And he also wants to get to 4,000 strikeouts, become just the fifth pitcher ever to do that. He's currently at 3,094. One of the texters, 713-780-ESPN, 2370 saying, heck no and heck no, Kate wants daddy home. Does Giselle with Tom, right? He's still kicking.
Don't sleep on the fact that they, and Lance can actually add something to this conversation as well, they've grown to really like Houston.
Yeah, I think they
because do. Because the two of them realize, unlike L.A. and unlike New York, where the paparazzi are everywhere, and they get a lot of, you know, people coming out of the woodwork coming at them when they go out or go, Justin and Kate go to dinner, and no one bothers them.
Yep.
And they like that about the fact that they have that anonymity while being in Houston. That meant something to them. As on top of the fact that they like the ownership, Justin's friends with Jim Crane, and the team's winning.
I think, too, that they, like, Verlander in this interview also talked about how he loves the preparation. Like, he loves playing. And if we're being completely honest, like, if he wants Kate Upton to go on the road trips, Kate Upton's going on the road trips. Like, I still think that they could have a lot of family time there together. Like, that's always hard to gauge. Like, everybody's so different. Like, Tom Brady, oh, I'm going to retire to spend time with Giselle and my kids. That lasted 3 months. You know what I mean?
So, was that more about Bruce Arians, or was that more about your career being over?
Right. And I think you can still find a lot of times for your family. Like, it's stinking Justin Verlander. If Justin Verlander went to his golfing buddy and golfing pal Jim Crane and said, you know what, I want Kate Upton to be on all of our trips and our kid to be in my suite, what's he going to say? He's going to say, absolutely, that sounds
been
great.
Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Look, it even came up during the finals with Wiggins, when Wiggins was talking about the fact that even the Minnesota Timberwolves, they were on a road trip and they were allowed to bring their spouses or significant others.
Yeah.
It's a deal that a lot of general managers just don't want to fight the fight and just say, okay, fine, sure.
There's some trips where they go. All the playoff games, I see them there. There's some road trips that they don't. But I don't.
Some teams, if they have the cake, we'll get a separate plane for the families.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but for the most part, it's like, yeah, they limit the guests depending on how big of a superstar you are. But yeah.
King of Twitch saying, no way he gets to 300. A win is hard to get. It is hard to get. But Verlander's still a very good pitcher. Todd the Show saying, think he would have to play somewhere like Houston at his age. Does he really want to be freezing the first month and last month of the season? I think that's a good point as well. I wanted to ask it from this angle as well. Let's assume that he does get to 300 wins. Let's assume that he does get to 4,000 strikeouts. So now you're looking at the rest of this season and then four more years on top of that. 40, 41, 42, 43. That's how old Justin Verlander would be in the next 4 years. 713-780-3776. If he's to get to both, 300 wins, 400 strikeouts, is he playing this year and the next four in a Houston Astro uniform?
I really believe he is. I really believe he is, but I'd say this. It depends on the state of the team. If this team is still competitive, if it's still winning games, and Jim Crane is still the owner, I think Justin Verlander is still a member of the Houston Astros. I think that it's got to be a give and take, right? If it's not about the money, if it's about chasing the numbers, then as much as he's going to get even more next year, and he'll deserve it based on what he's proven since he's come back off Tommy John. At a certain point, especially because of diminishing returns based on age alone, you would think that he and Jim work out a deal too where they go, okay, look, I gave you the two-year deal and bumped it in year two. We want you here. You want to win. We want to keep this team competitive. Dude, cut me some slack on the salary a little bit. We'll invest it into some other players, but we'd like you to finish your career here.
There's got to be some give and take there, yes. Right? See, the way you made it sound was that, like, Verlander would be breaking up with the Astros, like, a little bit there. To me, I could see it going the other way. Because I still believe, and look, maybe I'm a homer, but I believe that the Houston Astros are going to be a contender for the next four seasons. You just locked up Yordan Alvarez, who's going to be in the middle of your order. You know, Kyle Tucker, I'd have to look at the contract. I think that he's still under club control for the next 3 years after this one. So now you're looking at, you're still going to have a Kyle Tucker. You're still going to have a Jeremy Peña. This is his rookie year. You have him for 6 years. So I still think the Astros are going to be very good in 4 years. So they're still going to be looking for a rotation that can carry them to the postseason. I can see a scenario where Verlander in that final year, and this goes to, like, how much does Jim Crane want to have Verlander get to 300 wins in an Astro uniform? How much does Jim Crane want Justin Verlander to get to 4,000 strikeouts in a Houston Astro uniform? Because in 4 years, if the Astros are a contender still, and I still think that they're going to be a contender in four seasons, it could be a Zach Greinke situation where he can no longer crack your rotation and you have to let him walk in free agency. Like, there's no guarantee in 4 years when Justin Verlander's 43 years old that he's going to be one of your top five starting pitchers. And if you're a contender and you want to win the AL West and you want to win the American League and you want to win a World Series, do you have the luxury of a Hall of Famer not being one of your best five starting pitchers, chasing 300 wins, chasing 4,000 strikeouts when you have team goals and team aspirations?
I think the bigger thing is you have to weigh it all, right? Is he still effective?
Right.
If he's still effective, right, he doesn't have to be the ace. But if he is still effective and he is able to get outs and do what he's always done in his career, he doesn't have to be the ace, and he still brings plenty of value. We've seen with this team a year ago, just taking Lance out of that rotation, how desperate they would have been to have one more guy that's been there, done that, that could do that again for them. I think that it's a, like you said, it's a give and take and part of the negotiation, but it's also a part of weighing what exactly, realistically weighing where we are. Are you truly a contender? Can you still get guys out? Then can we meet in the middle and say, look, I'm going to cover you for all four of these years remaining, but do me the solid of not trying to have me cover you with more money than you deserve.
Right, but that's absolutely true. Like, in the contract situation of Verlander over the next few years is going to be fascinating because he signed the $50 million two-year deal this past year, and everybody gave Crane and the Astros grief, saying no one else gave Justin Verlander that contract, which Verlander, I forget where I read this, actually said Toronto offered him the very same contract, 50 years for 2 years, the vesting option, all of that. But how willing would the Astros – I think the Astros would be willing to do business like this offseason, but how willing would they be to be doing business in 2026? It's a really fascinating conversation. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 2370 asking us an interesting question that I'm going to morph here a little bit because I think you need to add more juice to even have this become a conversation. 2370 saying, if he wins the Cy Young in World Series this season, does he go into the Hall as an Astro? I will throw in the second part of this. Cy Young this year, maybe he doesn't win another Cy Young after this year, but wins a Cy Young this year. Let's say he gets the Astros to another World Series, but then pitches for the next 4 years in an Astros uniform, is wearing an Astros uniform when he wins 300, and he's wearing an Astros uniform when he strikes out his 4,000th career hitter and becomes one of only five pitchers to ever do that in Major League Baseball history. Would Justin Verlander go into Cooperstown with the Astro hat on his bust?
Nope. I don't believe so, and I'm not saying that just because Brendan's our producer. I think that, you know, he laid the foundation and the groundwork and had his best years no matter how good he's been as an Astro and got the World Series he didn't have as an Astro. I really believe that he feels that attachment to Detroit, and I think he owes it to Detroit. I believe that he would go in as a Tiger.
I think he would be a Tiger, too, but the question becomes... It becomes a question if he's in an Astros uniform for those two figures that I mentioned. Because
how long is the whole career?
It would be 13 with the Tigers. It'd be 9 with the Astros.
Yeah, I see. I think even as it weighs out just in years alone.
Two of his World Series, if he won another one this year, would be with the Astros. He never won one in Detroit, got there with one. 2,400 of his strikeouts would come in Detroit. 1,600 would come with the Astros.
He got there twice with the Tigers.
But never won one.
Right.
So 2,400 of his strikeouts would come with Detroit. 1,600-ish would come with the Astros. He would have, if he gets exactly 300 wins, 183 would come with Detroit, and then the rest would come with the Astros. It would be 117.
I think it's Detroit.
See, I lean Detroit too, but now it becomes it's a question, right? I think there's a bit of a question there.
Because I think the other thing that you brought up that I've thought about too is the same way LeBron felt like he owed it to Cleveland to go back after he did the whole decision and got his ring.
Yeah, see, that's a scenario I thought of too.
I really firmly believe that I could see him going back his final year for a swan song in Detroit.
Especially if it's to chase it, right? Like, next 2-3 years with the Astros, you rack up more wins, you rack up more strikeouts, you're 10 wins away, or maybe even 10 or fewer wins away.
He's also savvy enough in the negotiations to say, hey, by the way, and if I do this, the box office... And everybody,
oh, yeah.
That's going to weigh into it.
That's why the Tigers would be all in on that. Who did Nolan Ryan go into the Hall of Fame as? I'm trying to. He was inducted into the baseball. Didn't he go in as a Ranger?
The Ranger, I believe.
Which to me, like, that's kind of the case for Justin Verlander as a Hall of Famer to the Houston Astros.
The players don't decide, do they?
I don't believe that they do. But Nolan Ryan pitched 5 years with the Rangers, and they were from 42 to 46. And, like, I mean, he was still good from 42 to 46, but they were not even close to the years he had with the Astros, and they're not even close to the years that he had with the Angels. So, like, that kind of is an interesting conversation too, right? Like, why is Nolan Ryan in there as a Ranger Hall of Famer and Justin Verlander's an Astro?
A lot of it.
Hold on a second. Justin Verlander's an Astro is not as egregious as Nolan Ryan as a Ranger.
No, I hear that, but it's like, okay, Clyde Drexler retired, got his number retired with the Rockets. Yep. I think that a lot of it factors in. Like, is there bad blood with the other organization? Is there something from a player's perspective? Like in Major League Baseball, you get to choose which hat you don on your bust, right? And so
it is the player, right?
I believe it is 100% the player's choice, unless it's so out there that they might have a second discussion with you. But so I think that it's not as cut and dried as just statistics, years played with a team, and numbers. The player's emotions are going to play into this too. And I think in a lot of cases, that's why you see guys make a decision. You're like, really? He chose the Yankees over a team that he was with longer, but he won and he did some things. So
apparently it's the selection committee. It's not the player.
It used to always be the player because part of the interview, when everybody did their interviews and made the rounds before going into the Hall of Fame or before the final ballots came out, they were always asking, if you go in, which hat are you going to wear?
See, Nolan Ryan is a Rangers. Egregious.
Is that true he went in as a Ranger?
Yeah, I just looked up. I saw the bust, the physical bust. Like, there's no reason he should be a Ranger in the Hall of Fame. But no. He is. 713-780-ESPN. We'll take your thoughts on this. Will Verlander get to 300 wins? Will he get to 4,000 strikeouts? And if so, will he do it as a member of the Houston Astros? And then will Justin Verlander go into the Hall of Fame as an Astro? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Also, when we come back, people have been clamoring at us to talk about this Ryan Spader saying that the Yankees are playing with a different ball. We'll discuss that when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Everybody's saying, oh, if he goes to the Hall of Fame, Verlander will be with Detroit. Ring of Honor for both. I do lean Detroit. I just believe that if he's here for the next four seasons, which is a pretty heavy reach, like, let's be honest, that he's going to pitch for the next four seasons to be really good, also win a World Series, also get to 300 wins and 4,000. Like, that's absolute best-case scenario for Justin Verlander and the Houston Astros. And even at the end of that story, I still lean Detroit. Because he didn't have the falling out with Detroit like Nolan Ryan did with the Astros. Even though Nolan Ryan going in as a Ranger, not an Angel, is pretty wrong, too. And I find that to be very egregious. And I'm sure Brendan wants Justin Verlander to go into the Hall of Fame as a Detroit Tiger.
I was thinking about how much it would bother me.
If he went in as an Astro?
I think I'm 30 years old now. It shouldn't let it bother me at all. But it would make me kind of sad.
Yeah.
And I also like agree with you. If he gets 4 years, hits those numbers, it's tough. I do look at
it. It becomes a question.
What I look at is the fact that he won an MVP in Detroit. That's really hard to overcome.
Yeah, MVPs for a pitcher is pretty special. Now, he did win a Cy Young with the Astros and only had one Cy Young in Detroit, so he would have more Cy Youngs with the Astros as well. Look, I'm still leaning the Detroit side, but I think it can become a question. Now, if this is the last year for Verlander as an Astro, then it's very obvious that it's Detroit, no doubt about that. Somebody asking us, 0830, do the Astros retire JV's number? Let's make this question tough here, too. Let's say this is Justin Verlander's last year as an Astro. He has a really good year this year. Let's say he doesn't win the Cy Young, though, and the Astros don't win the World Series. Is Justin Verlander's number getting retired?
I have a smirk on my face if you can't see it, because I lived this.
Clyde?
Yeah. Because Les and Clyde were boys, just the way Verlander and Crane are. And Les made the decision, and he didn't care about any kind of data that we brought to the table to try and talk him out of it or do otherwise. Clyde was his guy. Clyde got him the second championship. He should believe, that trade was the difference. And the fact that they were tight was the reason why Clyde has his number retired in two places. Because to me, his whole career was in Portland. Drexler Way leads you into the Rose Garden. He deserves to have his number in Portland. He's a legend. He won a championship in Houston. I think because of Crane's relationship with JV, he will most certainly consider it, and I think he will lean towards doing it.
I think he gets his number
because he also got them over the hump with that first World Series for the city, and it was basically the trade that was made at the deadline to bring JV in.
I think there's pretty similar careers in their city. Clyde with the Rockets and Verlander with the Astros. Clyde was the second title, not the first.
Right.
Verlander obviously was the ace of the first team. But I believe that Verlander, as a member of the Astros, was better than Clyde as a member of the Rockets. Verlander was the stinking Cy Young in 2019 and was second in Cy Young voting in 2018 and was the best pitcher on the 2017 World Series team, where Clyde Drexler never touched an MVP, and he was never the best player on the Houston Rockets. So, like, if you're comparing the two, Verlander in Houston versus Drexler in Houston, to me it's a no-brainer, Verlander in Houston. And it's not a knock on my guy, Clyde Drexler, go Cougs. But I give Verlander the edge, and I think Verlander would have his number retired in Houston.
I don't know if I can give him the edge simply because of the fact that Clyde brought a different dynamic that they didn't have. They always had the dream. Yeah, but Verlander pitched every fifth day, too. I mean, Clyde was out there every single night.
Did Clyde get an NBA first team?
I don't know where he finished those years, but he also didn't have to do as much as he used to do in Portland because he finally had a big man to play with that took a lot of the heat off of him. But I think that, look, otherwise I see the similarities, and I think that that's why I said, much like what Les did for Clyde, I could see Crane doing it for JV in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we kind of morphed the conversation because I think Verlander would have his number retired in Houston, but Verlander in Houston versus Clyde in Houston. I'm taking Verlander.
Are you?
Oh, no doubt about it.
Depending on how long he goes, right?
I mean, Verlander's already went, let's see, 5 years. Clyde didn't go 5 years.
It was close. It was right about that.
But he gave you the finals in that first year, and then kind of disappointment after that with whether it was Barkley, whether it was with Pippen. Yeah. Verlander won the Cy Young in 19, finished second in the Cy Young in 18, and is a contender this year for the Cy Young.
I think
as well.
A lot of people, because of that hometown tie, and they're going to factor in Houston
probably
into the decision, would go Clyde. But when you lay it out like that, yeah, I could easily see JV over Clyde.
Well, that's the Hive, 713-780-ESPN. Verlander's career in Houston or Drexler's career in Houston, 713-780-3776. So people have been weighing in on this Ryan Spader thing. I have not heard this audio yet. You told me about this, Blinkers, and people have been texting us and tweeting us as if we heard this. Here was Ryan Spader, who you might famously remember as the guy who came out against Major League Baseball and said everybody was sign stealing, and then like deleted everything that he said and backed it off. And
he got
took
that
it all
cease
back.
And desist call from the Major League Baseball and went, "Wow, they pay me to be on the network. I better stop saying this stuff."
He might get another cease and desist because he got a hot take about the New York Yankees.
I'm a firm believer that the Astros were not the only team to do it in 2017 or 2018, whatever the hell.
2017, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer that that's not the case. I'm also a firm believer that the Yankees this year may be seeing different baseballs than the rest of Major League Baseball. I mean, we got Judge with 25 homers. We have Rizzo with 18 homers. I'm sorry, but I'm throwing up a big question mark there.
All right, so that was Ryan Spader on with the bench.
Now, can you give him a pass because he just found out he got COVID before the interview and said he wasn't feeling himself?
No.
Okay.
No, you don't lose your thought.
Just throwing it out there, trying to do a little protection program for Mr. Spader the second time around.
I think Spader's right on line here. I think he's totally right about everything he had to say. I mean, the Astros certainly were not the only ones cheating in 2017. We all know that. And, I mean, look at the Yankees' home run numbers while they're playing there in Williamsport, the Little League ballpark. I mean, I'm kidding. Actually hearing the second, because like
you're going to get that one Yankee fan that listens that's going to go nuts on text now.
Oh, yeah, which is fine. 713-780-ESPN if you're a Yankee fan, ready to watch your Yankees lose to the Astros in the Bronx this week. But like Ryan Spader was always the guy that we looked at as the one that said everybody was cheating. He got the season desist and like he had to shut up and he had to walk it back. The fact that he's also saying this about the Yankees, like, I'm not sure the Astro fans want Ryan Spader to be the voice of reason.
This does more to tarnish
exactly.
And take away from everything he said previously that helped support the Astros case in 17, because now he looks like a conspiracy theorist to the freaking umpteenth degree, and that his credibility goes with it, and I go, no, come on, man. Just shut your mouth and take care of yourself and sleep for a few days to get over COVID. But don't come out and say this, because now it takes away from everything he said previously.
Look, the Yankees, I thought you summed this up pretty good yesterday when you talked about, look, you know the dimensions of your ballpark, and you're going to build a team based on those dimensions. Like, we give a lot of Yankee fans a lot of grief because Yankee fans give Houston a lot of grief. So it goes both ways and just having fun with it. And look, the Bronx, it is short down the right field line. If we're being completely honest, for the Astros, it's very short down the left field line. The Astros are bigger in some areas, left field, center field, right center field, left center, right center, in that little horseshoe, bigger than a lot of parks. It plays somewhat neutral, whereas the Yankees have the short porch and right. There's some home runs there, but Minute Maid Park's one of the ballparks that gets more home runs than anywhere else, if we're being completely honest. But I went and looked at the numbers, because every ballpark now has humidifiers in the in the annals of the ballpark, to where like they're deadening the baseball, kind of what we saw at Coors Field for a long time. They're now doing this at every single ballpark to try to get a more consistent ball. So like, and we've heard Manfred last year. I mean, not from the horse's mouth, but they were using different balls in different ballparks, and there was a hot ball, there was a dead ball. So, like, there's been a lot of controversy and a lot of conspiracy theories about the baseballs. So I went and actually looked at the numbers on this. I actually took this seriously because the Yankees are hitting a lot of home runs. But if the Yankees are playing with different baseballs, they would have a lot of homers, right? And they do. But it would work both ways. So, like, the Yankees' ERA wouldn't be good, right? Like, if they're hitting lots of home runs because they're playing with different baseballs, their ERA should be bad as well, right? They have the best ERA in baseball. So this, to me, from Ryan Spader, as much as I want to give Ryan Spader some love, because he had the courage for like 10 seconds to talk about the 2017 Astros as being not the only team stealing signs back in 2017, which we all know is true. But I don't feel like he looked at any sort of evidence here. Like, he just looks at the offensive numbers for the Yankees, tons of home runs, which is factual. But he didn't look at the Yankees pitching numbers where they have the best ERA in all of baseball and completely eliminates that entire conspiracy from Ryan Spader.
No, I'm with you. It makes that's actually the best point that you could be made. I mean, look, you could say that they've got a good pitching staff. But it's the same reason why in Colorado the opponent's pitching numbers were up at just as well as the Rockies were because of what you were dealing with. Look, I'll say this. I don't think that it's a fallacy. I believe that there's some truth to the fact that Major League Baseball is screwing with the baseballs now that they own and operate Rawlings and the company that produces them. But I think that it opens Pandora's box in terms of how far you want to take it. Spader took it to a whole new level here, and I don't think he's going to get a whole lot of people buying into that. Look, they beefed up their lineup too, right? You talked about the fact with a short porch in right field, but you added a guy, you know, like Rizzo,
who's a lefty,
who can make a killing off the right field porch.
Mm-hmm. Joey Gallo.
And Joey Gallo at the deadline a year ago that's still in the lineup. That's hit. Stanton's now healthy with Judge. You got four guys right there that are some of the hardest hitting, biggest home run hitters in baseball in the same lineup. Their numbers should be impressive.
Yeah. So, like, I would be a little bit more on board with Spader if the Yankees pitching numbers were also very bad. Like, hitting all the home runs for the Yankees, it could be a hot baseball. It could be. But then the Yankees pitching staff wouldn't have the best ERA in all of baseball. I'm surprised that Spader had that thought. I'm curious if there's any other great conspiracy theories out there from Ryan Spader. 713-780-ESPN. Z is texting us in. Kevin Z, big part of Nolan Ryan going into the Hall of Fame as a Ranger was the bad blood. We knew about the bad blood with the Astros. We know that he left the Astros.
I didn't until I read it.
Oh, okay.
Well, until King of Twitch put it out, I didn't realize.
Yeah, so he left free agency. There was a lot of bad blood there. My thought was that I didn't know if he was a Ranger or an Angel. I knew he wasn't an Astro, and I knew about the bad blood, but I didn't know if he was a Ranger or an Angel. And to be honest with you, he should have been an Angel. He shouldn't have been a Ranger.
In all my years of following Nolan Ryan, and I love Nolan Ryan ever since I was a kid, I always saw him as an Angel because he had dominant years and a lot of years with the Angels.
Yeah, he should have went to the Hall of Fame. 3364 saying, didn't Clyde go to U of H? I think he means, like, how are you a U of H dude? And saying that Clyde didn't have a better year as a Rocket, better career as a Rocket than
honest.
He did. Because I'm honest. I think Verlander did. Somebody saying, did y'all forget JV not playing for 2 years? Nope. I didn't. I remember that very clearly and still would put Justin Verlander's Astro career over Drexler's Rocket career.
You can't, again, you can nitpick a whole bunch of things, but just like you can say, well, the players didn't like him that 1 year and they didn't want him to throw out the first pitch, but guess what? They love him when he's wearing 35 and has Astros or Houston across the front of his jersey and he's towing the rubber for you in a big game. And when he's been on the mound and when he's pitched for the Astros, he's been damn good.
It's a fun conversation. Those conversations I love. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to a Rocket legend, Mario Elie. Does some work for AT&T Sportsnet, of course, Kiss to Death. He's going to join us next. Current state of the Rockets and also NBA draft on Thursday. Who are some prospects he likes? We'll talk to Mario next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.